Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Sarah LaDuke. This Saturday, September 7th, the Ruth and Elmer Wellen Museum of Art at Hamilton College in Clinton, New York, will open a major new exhibition entitled Menagerie, Animals in Art from the Wellen Museum. In this massive selection of work from the collection, each of the items on display include representations of non-human creatures, animal iconography across all areas of cultural production from the ancient world to the present day. The exhibition explores not only the visual presentation of these animals, but what their inclusion in art means about the relationship between wild and tamed fauna and humankind. Menagerie will be on view at the Wellen tomorrow through June 28, 2025. Dr. Elizabeth Shannon is the collections curator at the museum, and she joins us now. Thank you for joining us.
No, thank you.
How long have you been planning this exhibition at the Wellen, and what was the initial idea?
We've been planning the exhibition probably for about 2.5 years, which probably sounds like a long time. It's actually a relatively short time to put together an exhibition of this scale. Although I will say, because this is a collection show, almost all of the artwork that's in the exhibition has already been housed in the museum. So it's been more a process of kind of digging into what we already have than kind of going out into the world and, you know, looking for inspiration elsewhere, although we have purchased a number of works especially for the show. The impetus for the show was in part me starting my role here as collections curator at the Wellen.
In 2020 you started?
Yes, I'll have been here 4 years on the 1st of December.
Okay.
So I started during kind of deep, dark pre-vaccine COVID, which I do not recommend in terms of moving and taking up a new job. But one of the good things was that I was able initially to, you know, spend time in the museum when a lot of people were having to work from home and slowly start to kind of get to know the collection. So the Wellen has a collection approaching about 10,000 objects. Obviously, that's quite a lot of material to try and familiarize yourself with.
Yeah.
We have things, you know, from the, you know, Neo-Assyrian Empire through to objects that have just come out of an artist's studio. And, you know, we've never seen them before. They've just arrived with us. So brand new work. So I was really looking for a way both to help me familiarize myself with the objects that the museum has in its collection and also make a really broad selection of material visible to the public. And also through a theme that hopefully, you know, would attract a really broad visitorship. So we're a teaching museum. And when, for example, when we're purchasing works of art for the collection, which is something that I'm involved in with my role, I tend to be thinking about, you know, a student's going to be interested in this work. A faculty member's going to be able to teach with this work. Is it going to serve us well for many years rather than, you know, a two-week period where, you know, this topic is hot or something? But also, you know, we're sited within a particular community in Clinton and in central New York. I wanted to really try and make sure that we were presenting objects that people could find a way into and could think about from a wide variety of disciplinary lenses, but also something that would be fun and accessible. And I kind of thought, who doesn't like animals?
Right. It's a red flag, honestly, when someone doesn't, right?
I mean, if someone's had a horrible experience with animals in the past.
Any attitude can be earned, but
yes.
It is like... Yeah. You know, you kind of look askance if someone's just like, I hate animals.
All animals are an anathema to me. Yeah, that's not a great start. So so I thought, you know, this is a very accessible, hopefully kind of way into the collection. So my colleagues and I started thinking about, okay, so what have we got that could potentially fit this theme? Well, the minute we started looking, we were just covered in objects that feature animals, including objects where we thought there's no way this object will have an animal included, and then we would find one. So we've really been playing animal hide and seek for 2.5 years. I had a checklist initially that had around 1,000 objects on it, which is way too many. The show itself now has about 300 objects in it.
That's huge. But
It's That's enormous.
Huge. That's a big exhibition. Yeah.
It's a big exhibition, but it will be on for a year. So
right. Yeah.
That was another another aspect we were trying to keep in mind is that we want this potentially to be a show that people can come back to. There will be a few objects that get swapped out during the year, but it will be by and large works by the same artist, and it will be a work that's like the work that we'll be swapping over in spring semester. So hopefully that will add a little bit of difference for people who are on campus, but everything's from the collection. So you can always come in and, you know, with notice, if you request an object, we can always pull it for people. So hopefully people will find this engaging and interesting. We have works from all sorts of different cultures. We have works featuring animals that you will find in the world if you step outside your front door, but also animals that do not exist in the real world. So mythological creatures, hybrid creatures, things like griffins, where you have kind of multiple animals in one. We have objects that look like an animal, but are actually a deity in the guise of an animal. It's been really fun to work on, actually. I've learned way more about animals than I ever knew I didn't know. And it's also been a really, really interesting way to think about a lot of other topics that intersect with, you know, wildlife, with animals that we live with, you know, in a domestic sphere. So I know you have dogs.
I have a dog. Yes, cats. Indeed. Yeah.
And so, you know, a lot of people on a daily basis, you're interacting with an animal that, you know, particularly pets, they end up becoming family members, and you start to think about them as though they're just another person who's part of your family, who maybe has a shorter lifespan, but maybe you'll still talk about that creature in 20 years' time. They're still part of the family. So we have objects that reflect that too. We specifically bought a daguerreotype, a 19th century photographic process involving mirrors and glass. So we have a little daguerreotype of a dog, and there's a tiny bit of fabric you can see on one side that we think is probably a lady's dress. But the daguerreotype is completely focused on this dog who's resting. And to my mind, you know, in terms of its scale, it fits in the palm of your hand. So looking at it is quite an intimate process. It's like having pictures of your pet on your phone and being able to show people, you know, look at what my cat did yesterday, or look at this great picture of my dog. You know, people in the past had similar kind of responses to the animals in their lives. So we just have a massive material that hopefully, you know, there is going to be something for everybody in this show. We've written a lot of contextual information to accompany the objects. To be honest, it's helped me understand sometimes what I'm looking at, but you can come and visit this exhibition with, you know, not read a single word and just have a really fantastic experience looking at whatever object attracts you.
Our guest is Liz Shannon, collections curator at the Welland Museum at Hamilton College in Clinton, New York. The new exhibition, Menagerie, Animals in Art from the Welland Museum, opens tomorrow. What went into winnowing down the number of objects from the 1,000 that you found to the 300 you include in the show? I'm sure there's a lot of different things you could pull from, but what are some of the processes and thoughts behind making those decisions?
Some of the things I was keeping in mind are ideas that I think probably most curators, especially these days, kind of are keeping in mind. So I wanted to make sure that we had representative works from as broad a range of cultures and time periods as possible, basically making sure that, you know, lots of different voices are in the mix. Wanted to make sure we had a good range of creatures. So, you know, we have so much material that deals with horses and dogs particularly, but finding artworks that featured insects was sometimes challenging. Uh-huh. But actually, you know, we have found some great objects that include insects, including a print by Honoré Daumier, a French illustrator from the 19th century, who was publishing kind of basically cartoons in newspapers sometimes. It's a couple on a riverbank in France being bothered by mosquitoes. So that's enabling us to talk about, or at least think about, when does an animal in its natural habitat, just doing its thing, suddenly becomes a pest. And more often than not, it's, you know, it's when humans start to encroach upon that environment. So, you know, trying to make sure we're incorporating animals that we didn't have represented particularly regularly in the collection. Also thinking about, you know, who has made these works, you know, may be aware, there's a lot of discussion around, you know, particularly with collections, we tend to hold an awful lot of work by dead white men, straight white men. So trying to make sure we were incorporating works by people of color, works by women, just making sure that we're being as inclusive as possible in terms of the voices that are part of this show. And then, you know, there's some really, really practical kind of winnowing that happens too, in terms of, okay, we've got to include all of these objects in this prescribed amount of space. How do we do that?
Right.
How many can we fit in? We don't want to completely overwhelm our visitors. Some objects are pretty impervious and can be out on display for 100 years and are never going to change. Other works are very sensitive to light, to other conditions. So in fact, for this show, because we've had so much material and so much of it is two-dimensional, we're going to be using drawers so that you can, you will not be able to see these works, obviously, as you enter this space, but you can pull out drawers and see a whole variety of different works kind of juxtaposed together that way. And, you know, those works can stay out all year, but only because they're going to be displayed in drawers. And also media too. So, you know, we've got ceramics, we've got sculpture. As I said, we've got lots of 2D works, primarily on paper. We don't have any film, but just trying to make sure we have works of different scales, different media. It's been a really interesting jigsaw puzzle in all sorts of different ways.
If you need to add a video of a dog, I have about 400,000 hours.
Only 400,000.
Yeah, that'll help. It's not art. It's just videos of my pet. What is the span of the show? You have stuff from right up until just about today, but what is the oldest piece?
The oldest work in the show is an Italo-Corinthian alabastron.
So it's basically old.
It sounds old, doesn't it?
It does.
From 650 BCE.
Yeah, that was a long time ago.
It was indeed, yeah. So we're really kind of pushing back there. Yeah, it's been really interesting because sometimes, you know, animals are included on ancient vessels for decorative purposes, but they're also symbolic that, you know, they represent so many things that I'm very hopeful with the show overall. We'll be having so many students and professors come through. I have a feeling we're going to learn so much more about the objects that, you know, we already know a decent amount, but I think we're going to have a lot of additional insights, both from professors, from students, and also I suspect from the general public too. I'm waiting to see which labels I have to rewrite because we misidentified a creature, or, you know, someone's able to be much more specific about, you know, what kind of bird this is. I've been kind of having some fun with that because we have a number of representations of birds in the show where it's like, is it a phoenix? Is it a Luan bird? Is it a funky, colorful chicken?
Either way, it sounds gorgeous.
Yes, they're beautiful, very gorgeous creatures.
What were some of the recurring kind of themes and connections that you discovered as you put the exhibition together?
I'm a photo historian by training, but obviously as a collections curator, I'm also a massive generalist. There's nothing I'm not interested in. I continually, you know, in this role, I'm proving to myself there's so much I don't know. I basically don't know anything. And looking at these objects is always kind of just teaching me so much about the world and about art. I wasn't super familiar with iconography from East Asia. And it's been fascinating to see how not just Eastern Asian cultures, but there's so much crossover between cultures in terms of the iconography that they're using and the kind of mythological creatures that exist in these cultures. They'll come through. We've got a beautiful print of a naga by Shazia Sikander, who's a Pakistani-American contemporary artist. And it's this gorgeous kind of, it's got this dragon head and this huge snaky body. And I was completely unfamiliar with what a naga was. And it turns out it's this kind of mythological deity creature. And it appears in other works that are part of the show. And nagas often have a head that's either snaky cobra looking, or Shazia Sikander has given her naga a kind of dragon-like head that looks very similar to these beautiful golden dragons we have on this blue imperial Chinese robe. So there's all of this kind of amazing crossover happening. And we've also we seem to be being inundated with koi or carp. I completely did not understand that, particularly in Japanese prints, all of these beautiful carp that are leaping. Legend has it that the carp are trying to leap up to the dragon gate, and if they get over the dragon gate, they turn into golden dragons. So,
it's aspirational.
Totally aspirational. Yep, absolutely. You know, about being resilient and keeping on and, you know, attaining joy. And, you know, it's just suddenly also making this link between two creatures I had no idea had any relation, but, you know, the carp and the dragon and bringing those together. So I think starting to make all these connections between, you know, creatures that exist in the real world, creatures from myth, creatures from fantasy, and how a lot of these threads, they come from the ancient world, from ancient cultures, and there are still resonances today. I think also realizing too how, at least in terms of the imagery that we hold at the museum, we have so many representations of horses, where horses are connected with ideas of power. So if you have a horse, you immediately are kind of a higher status person, right? You know, knights are on horses, you have cavalry officers, that's a higher status military position. And you know, you are literally higher than everybody else. You've got to be able to afford to feed your horse. And understanding too, again, through the objects, you know, not everyone can afford a horse. Maybe you have a plow and it's being pulled by a completely different creature, depending where you are in the world and depending, you know, how much money you have, what your status is. So it's been really fascinating. And of course, in Clinton too, we're quite rural. We're in a rural area, and working on this show, all my colleagues have been teasing me about it, actually, rightly. I just got really tuned in to the animals that are around us. So we have chipmunks living around us. We've had some black bears occasionally coming to campus and being spotted in Clinton. And we just bought a new work by an artist called Zana Brisky for the show. That's going to, it'll be the first work you see as you walk through the entry. And it depicts a black bear about a year and a half old from the Catskills. And it's called a bearogram. So it's a photogram. So Brisky goes out into the forest on a moonless night, puts up a huge sheet of photographic paper, and basically waits for wildlife to come by. So it's part of a series called Animal Grams. And in this case, it's bearogram number 10. And the bear came by, she let off a very kind of short but powerful flashlight that doesn't upset the creature that she's capturing with it. And it imposes the silhouette of the bear on the photographic paper. And it's absolutely beautiful. You can see how furry the bear's paws are. And I was a little concerned because we have had some bears spotted in the local area. Is this bear or these bears trying to come and see its friend in the gallery? I don't know. I hope not. But, you know, being aware that these are wild creatures, and the artist is very attuned to this too, and she wants to make this clear to the audience, you know, you need to be so respectful of these wild creatures that they're going about their business. But they're just fascinating. And the scale of this photogram, this bearogram, you know, it's life size. It's the absolute impression of the bear on the day or the night. I'm British, so I've never encountered a wild bear in the where I grew up. So even living somewhere where that sort of encounter is possible is a little nerve-wracking.
Still quite an adventure.
Yeah.
The exhibition sounds absolutely stunning. I really hope to get to come and see it. And it's been marvelous meeting you and speaking with you about it. Thank you so much, Liz.
You're very welcome.
Our guest was the Ruth and Elmer Wellen Museum of Arts Collections curator, Dr. Elizabeth Shannon. The new exhibition, Menagerie, Animals and Art from the Wellen Museum, opens tomorrow and runs through June 8th, 2025. Links to more information are posted along with this interview at WAMC.org. I'm Sarah LaDuke, and you're listening to The Roundtable.